Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Becky Talks Parks, a podcast for parks and recreation professionals who want to raise the bar in the field. Today, we talk to Jaina Lang, who's a recreation program supervisor at the City of Lakewood in Colorado. Hey guys, how's it going? So this is episode number 3, and I'm super excited because on this episode, I got to interview Jaina Lang, and Jaina Lang is an incredible person, and she's so generous and so kind, and I love that she believes in this project enough to be on episode number 3, and this is my second interview, so thank you, Jaina. Jaina talks to us about how she worked her way up from a lifeguard position into where she is now. And I think that that story is so powerful, and that's exactly the kind of message that I'm trying to send to students and young professionals who are interested in the field, because so many times people jump into a lifeguard or a cashier position or camp counselor, and they don't realize that they could actually be forming the foundation for their entire career. And so it's really exciting to hear her talk about all the different steps that she took to get to her current role. We also talk about what it's like to be a supervisor in terms of hiring. And I know that right now is very busy for summer season. We've got to hire a ton of employees. And so we talk about some of the best practices for onboarding. We talk about how to manage the overwhelm that comes with that. We talk about how to work with employees as people first and treating them like they truly matter. And we talk about how to recognize them in a way that's unique to them, because everyone likes to be appreciated differently. And finally, we go into some partnerships. Many organizations, especially Parks and Recreation, have partnerships with their local schools or small businesses or different sports clubs. And Jaina talks about what it's like to form those partnerships and how they've been beneficial to her and her organization. So those are some of the highlights, but I love what Jaina has to say at the end of our conversation about what it means to her to raise the bar in the field of parks and recreation, and I can't wait for you guys to hear about what Jaina truly thinks is the future of parks and recreation moving forward. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, rate it on iTunes, share it with a friend, or just give me a thumbs up on Facebook or Instagram. Thanks again for all your support, and welcome to episode number 3 with Jaina Lang.
I definitely was a Parks and Rec kid myself, and what I mean by that is I was the girl that would go to the local pool. My home actually backed up to 6th Avenue West Pool when I grew up, so I would go to the pool sun up to sundown. The lifeguards would always have to kick me out. I'd be the kid hanging out during cold weather. So with that, I was lucky enough to come in contact with Kim Maxie Henderson, who at the time was a staff outside at 6th Avenue West. She was a care coach, taught lessons, lifeguarded. And she was she actually made such a difference in what I was doing as a child, and had such a positive impact on me that I definitely knew that I wanted to be like her and wanted to be a lifeguard when I turned 15 years old. So I started asking more questions about how that happened and what I needed to do. After that, I got certified and worked as a lifeguard at Glennon Heights Pool from ages 15 to 20. So I was lucky enough to get hired by Foothills Parks and Rec when I was 15, and then kept working my way up from lifeguard to WSI to the pool manager. And then when I was, the summer of 99. City of Lakewood inherited Glennon Heights Pool from Foothills Parks and Recreation District, and so I was asked to work, of course, at Glennon, as a pool manager for the City of Lakewood. And so at that time, I decided to move and switch to the City of Lakewood, same pool, and I began working as a pool manager. So all in all, that is a great start to my Parks and Rec career that I didn't even know was going to end up being my life's career. So after that, I went on to graduate from Cuyahoga Springs with a business administration degree, and I took a summer off to travel, and I really appreciate that I did that because I just got to learn so much, traveled to Europe, just kind of took a break from everything. And as soon as I got home, I got a call from a now coworker here at the City of Lakewood asking if I wanted to interview and apply for a full-time aquatic coordinator position in Lakewood. And I had no idea what that was, but I knew that that was all I knew so far was lifeguarding and aquatic swimming. And I really enjoyed Parks and Rec, so I thought, why not? I'll give it a try. So I ended up applying and getting that position and worked in aquatics for about 7 to 8 years and for the city of Lakewood. And after that, I had an opportunity to lateral over to a sports coordinator position. And at the time, that was basically a lateral move just from dry or from the wet side of things to the dry side of things so that I could learn more about park recreation, just be exposed to the programming side of things. So I was really excited to have that opportunity come up. Worked for a few years in that area, and supervising staff more and more, and so then I was promoted to a youth program supervisor a couple years ago, and got to actually start supervising the TR program, the therapeutic recreation program, as well as some of the programs that I had been overseeing before. And so that was a really exciting opportunity, a pretty significant job. And I would say definitely more in the supervisory realm of things. And then a couple years after that, I was again promoted and inherited more programs, which is now my title, the recreation program supervisor for the city of Lakewood. And that basically encompasses all of our parks and recreation programs, outdoor, indoor, and it's our fitness and wellness program, therapeutic recreation, sport, program. So quite an array of programming. So that's kind of the history of me and how I got to my position.
That's great.
It was definitely the phone call. I would say in college, it didn't even dawn on me. I hadn't really heard about the parks and recreation industry too much, and I would say, you know, you just kind of grow up working part-time at the pool, and so that phone call was really instrumental to me, and that provided me an opportunity to learn more about what was available at Parks and Rec, and I immediately thought, hey, this is for me. I'm going to give it a try.
Mm-hmm. And so now in your job, so can you describe what you do on a daily basis? Like, what time you get into work? What's your main priorities when you come into work each day?
Well, I would say first and foremost, just a check-in of my staff and what's going on and making sure everything's running well. And they do a really good job of updating me and communicating with me. So with my current position, I supervise full-time, part-time staff and volunteers. And I would also say on a daily basis, I mean, I get into work at like 8:30, you know, depending upon the day. It's all depending upon what's scheduled for the day, but typical day is 8:30 to about 5 o'clock for me. And I would say it's really about networking. I serve on a lot of committees, talking with people, doing a lot of administrative work and evaluation of our programs and services. And so that's kind of a broad idea of what I do, meeting with a lot of community partners to get, you know, to kind of do more with less and really find out how we can better serve the community and what our gaps are and help us serve the community. That's kind of very broad what, you know, I don't know how much detail I can give you there day to day, but that's kind of some of it.
And so you said supervising is a major part of what you do, and right now we are getting into summer season, so I'm sure it's quite busy for you. So when it comes to hiring, and maybe you can give me some background, but I know most professionals right now are hiring for, you know, at least a couple hundred of seasonal employees. So what does that look like for you, and how are you preparing for that?
Well, I honestly wish I had a great formula to share with everyone. And I also wish I had enough staff to fill all the positions at this time. So I think for us, it's really preparing early. We start getting ready to hire in about December or January and start posting our positions very early. We also kind of get out in the community and make sure that we're attending all the job fairs that we can and getting staff out there with a marketing campaign and really letting people know what we need, kind of selling the benefits of the position and the impacts that they have on the community. So that's kind of early on. And I think, too, it's really just having good systems in place. I'm lucky to work in a very large organization that has quite a bit of support to get these things done and people hired. But we really rely heavily on those systems and the people and the roles that everyone plays to get those people onboarded.
Do you think that there's a certain system that has been implemented recently or one that works really well that other agencies could use, or is it really just specific to yours?
I think it's probably specific to each agency and what will work for them. I mean, we're so large and we have kind of different people and processes that it's hard to recommend, you know, something major for everyone. But I would say WorkBright has come up very often. We've done a demo of that. In trying to at least collect the paperwork from people and make that a streamlined process. In addition to that, I would just say we, every year, we're looking to evaluate our process from the year before and did it meet everyone's needs? Were there any barriers or bottlenecks? And we actually just went through a couple of meetings recently to kind of take a look at that and talk through that. So I think that's really helpful in just making sure that you're not just going through the motions each year, that you're really taking time to talk through that hiring process and how you can make it better for everybody involved on an annual basis. Peak time, we're hiring year-round.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hiring all year round, and we have that influx during the summer season, and so we can kind of use that as the season to evaluate, if you will.
I gotcha. So when you are hiring for new employees, and I think of a lot of new employees like myself or like yourself when you started on your career path as a lifeguard, you know, many young people, they don't know if they want a career in Parks and Rec, and they're probably just trying to get a summer job, which means that they don't have a lot of experience or skills. And so what are you looking for when someone applies to tell you that they're a good fit for your organization?
Well, I would say number one, just enthusiasm and passion for serving the community. And I think at a young age, that's hard to communicate sometimes, but we're really looking for people that just want to be a part of serving the people around them. And that just comes with energy, enthusiasm. And then we get into the, you know, of course, reliability and responsibility that comes with that. But I think for us, it's truly about the energy that a person will bring to the table. And then we also introduce our core values really early on and talk about those with the interviewees or candidates that we're talking to so that they have a good idea of what we're looking for. And then they can kind of share some examples that they've, you know, exemplified through their life experience so far during the process so we can get a good idea if that's a good fit.
And do you find that most of your summer employees tend to stick around, or are they busy with school, or how do you retain your employees?
Still working on that formula as well. I would say the goal is, of course, to retain people as much as possible, but with people coming in for summer, we know that we're going to some of them to school, other activities, to college out of state, just those everyday things. But we do try to share our staff among our aquatics area, our facilities area, and our programs area. That's kind of how we're broken out. So we've done a lot more staff sharing, and what I mean by staff sharing is someone may be a cashier, and we actually ask them if they're interested in working additional hours, and if they may work a sports camp for us or something. So we've done a lot more of that to retain staff and get them more hours and hopefully meet their needs as well.
Okay, so let's talk about the onboarding process for new employees, because I think that's the very first impression of your organization. So how do you make them feel welcome and involved and really make them feel like they matter to your organization?
Yeah, I was thinking about that question a little bit. And, you know, I think for us, it's really about connecting early. So kind of listening to what's important to that person, and then also what's important for them in the next 3 to 5 years, how do they view recognition, what are their strengths, and just kind of taking notes of that while they're coming in the doors, but also setting realistic goals, if you will, and setting a realistic pace for people coming in, I think is really important. For us, for example, we kind of do some tours or expose people to different facilities and kind of share all that Parks and Recreation is so that people have a good idea of not only their role, but the kind of the role of everyone involved in that bigger picture, how they're contributing to that bigger picture. culture.
Because they want to feel like they're making an impact not only in your organization, but in their community. Do you typically do training one-on-one, or do you do a group setting, or have you found a formula for that? Because I know that that's tough, especially with like learning new registration software. That can be a huge part of training, and it can take up a lot of hours too, especially if you're doing it one-on-one, but sometimes that's just the way it works. What do you guys do?
Yeah, I think that's also a work in progress, but right now for summer staff training, we definitely do kind of training in the masses and do it over, you know, a certain time period in May or June, depending upon the camp start date. But outside of that, we're typically bringing people in one-on-one and from the interview, trying to do some training with them or some mentoring or buddying up with a similar type role is really helpful. And that's really helpful for that rec track portion too that we use. That's the software that we use. So that people aren't overwhelmed out of the gates, but they really have not only a person as a resource that basically can help and answer questions, but also that's in addition to, of course, our processes that are filed on our intranet that they can pull up. So I think it's just really a constant work in progress about what else can we do to onboard, and we're still having those conversations all the time. So we don't have any perfect, like I said, formula for that either, but we're always taking a look at that.
And I'm sure it's constantly evolving too, because it seems like every day there's a new technology that, you know, well, we could try this and maybe it'll make the onboarding process or the training process go more smoothly. But there's always risks anytime you try a new thing. So I guess it's just kind of figuring out what works best for your organization over time.
Yes, absolutely. It's going to be what works and what resources and support you have to implement, you know, different systems. For those that do get in the admin or more of our full-time staff, we have kind of a super user group, a committee of people that have become resources or are probably the most knowledgeable about the system at this point in time. And they are looked to, or we offer those people up as resources to buddy up with or to bounce questions off of. And then outside of that, like I said, you go through kind of those processes on our intranet and just kind of walk through those to get yourself started. So it's more self-initiated, I guess.
And something that you initially said at the beginning of this conversation was that your staff has great communication with you. What are some of the ways that you communicate with your staff?
I would say always. So it could be via text, it could be email, it could be phone. It just kind of depends on the situation. But I will say they're all very good about keeping me in the loop. And if there's any updates to provide, they'll either send me a quick email or just call me real quick, and I do the same with them to check in as well. Really important to keep those lines of communication open. A little while back in one of our RISE programs, and my staff was on site at the program and had something occur and handled it really well and called our police department, but then immediately called me to let me know what was going on. I let my boss know, so it kind of just trickled up, and everybody was well aware of what was going on. We were able to pull together and kind of tackle it and make sure we had all our bases covered to move forward and document the incident that happened.
The communication piece is so important, but I think that in order to have open communication, there has to be a level of trust there too. And can you talk about how to maintain trust? And it's really about putting or treating employees as people first. So can you talk a little bit about how you demonstrate that in your job?
It's really about kind of establishing a safe space to talk in and making that person feel comfortable and not, I want to say, not judged or picked at for anything that they do. And you kind of have to decide as a supervisor, you know, if there's a saying, pick your battles. And so I think it's really about how you're going to coach an employee and how you're going to treat them. And didn't our mothers always tell us, treat others as you want to be treated? That's kind of what I always think back to in terms of treating employees as people first, but really focusing in on their strengths, their wants, their desires, and making sure, you know, I do see little things and send a quick email of thank you once in a while or a little note, or I may give them a little Starbucks gift card once in a while or something just to kind of build that trust and establish how much I value them and how I know that they're, you know, really contributing and working really hard. And I think once they see that I realize that or understand that, they're willing to, you know, just share and work together, and that trust grow. We have a citywide program that's very structured. It's called You're a Big Deal, and it's a monthly program, and people get nominated and recognized by the city manager. And then we also just have, you know, your everyday recognition, your thank yous, and within our division, the supervisors just thanking the staff. We gave out candy the other day as a thank you, and I think it was Employee Recognition Day early in March. I can't remember the date right now. But we try to do that together, or just, you know, kind of vary it and make sure that everybody feels a part of that. So we have all different types.
One doesn't fit for everyone.
Right, exactly, because everybody likes, or everybody gets appreciated differently, and so knowing who they are as a person first, I'm sure, helps to figure out how they would like to be recognized.
Yeah, someone may not want to be up in front of the city manager getting recognized, but they may want to really go to this professional development workshop or something, and I think it's just kind of dialing into what's important for that person and being able to support that as a supervisor.
What do you think as far as, then, you know, you might see someone with a lot of potential in your department, and are there any steps that you might take to set up a relationship with them to ensure that they're getting the support that they need? And as a young professional myself, when someone takes the time to talk to me like you're doing today, that kind of relationship goes a long way, not only figuring out what you want to do with your career, but also just some of the lifelong skills that you can take no matter where you go. So do you have any tips maybe or advice for setting up some of those relationships with younger professionals?
You could reach out to your supervisor and let them know you're interested in a mentorship. I have had multiple over my career, and I have been really blessed with that, and that's helped me a lot to just bounce ideas off of or just gain an understanding or different perspectives on things. And so I think making sure that you know your supervisor can't always serve in that role for you, but they'd be happy to maybe find or solicit people or provide some, you know, names if possible of people that would help do that or might best align with kind of what you're looking to do. So I think it's really, again, asking for that, because not everyone always knows that's what somebody wants. And then having your supervisor help. I would say one thing that I did early on was reach out to our state association, Colorado Parks and Recreation Association, and ask. They had had a more formal mentorship program prior to me asking, but it wasn't in the works when I was asking to have a mentor. But again, they went above and beyond and set me up with a mentor at that point and really helped me out. And that was instrumental for the next few years.
So did you take a leadership role in CPRA as well, or were you just doing the mentoring?
I started with mentoring, but then I took a leadership role in our, it was the CARA section, if you will, and I served for 4 years on the CARA board. And then that led into more opportunities. And I was elected for the executive board for the next 3 years after that. So that's one thing I would recommend to young professionals as well. It's just, you know, saying yes to things and kind of putting yourself out there, networking, asking questions, definitely create opportunity.
I want to talk about something that you mentioned before. Do you want to talk a little bit about maybe if you guys have been doing this for a while, how it's worked for you, or if it's new, what you're trying to set up and the goal of doing some partnerships?
Sure. I would say it's not new for us in Lakewood, and I think we're very well connected with community businesses, partners in general, and so we're always looking at who can best deliver services or who can help you best deliver services, and we have a plethora of partnerships, so it's hard to kind of dive into that, but a couple that I will tell you of. One is with Jewish Family Services, and it comes to mind because we're able to partner with them, and they receive grant funding to do summer lunch programs. And so basically, each year we've been targeting underserved areas in Lakewood, and they drive a little school bus. It's the Lunchbox Express. It's really cute. but they come and deliver lunches to anybody 18 and under in the areas that we provide. And so I think just knowing with partnerships, you know, anything is possible. You can definitely do more with less. And that's a big ask that keeps happening, a big thing that comes up in Parks and Rec is how are you going to do more with less? And so that's why I think partnerships become so valuable.
So I've been in a few communities where they're concerned about partnerships because then it seems like your organization is solely working with them. Do you have anything that you might say that, or I guess what's your philosophy around them to kind of mitigate some of those fears around looking like you're playing sides with certain organizations or businesses?
Sure. I think for us, it's really evaluating our needs and the partner's needs in an initial conversation to make sure that everybody's on the same page and making sure that the goals are met and the outcomes are aligned. That kind of will help you set out if it's a good fit or not, almost like an onboarding process or an interview of a new candidate, right? So you go to the table and you have that conversation and hopefully mitigate those up front.
As far as your partnerships go, do you have, what are some other examples of partnerships that you've maybe helped to form along the way or some that are working really well? Are they related to sports or programs or camps or all the above?
I would say all the above, the one I mentioned is one that's more frequent, but we're also always working with Jefferson County Public Schools, and I think getting involved with your local school system is huge when you're delivering parks and recreation services, and I know a lot already do that, but we have a great connection. We work with our local middle schools on a middle school sports program. We're delivering camps to underserved areas and looking at those free and reduced lunch areas of our Title I schools and talking to those schools and how can we better serve you and your families. So it's kind of, I don't know, I could go on and on about partnerships in the list of partners that we have. We work with, you know, CCU, and they rent space for us for some of our athletic fields, a lot of our recognized sports organizations, so that they have space to play, and we consider that still serving our community because a lot of those kids are Lakewood kids using our fields, and we're not necessarily providing that service, but those partners are.
Where do you see the future of partnerships? Do you see that changing in the next 10 or 15 years, or do you think that, you know, maintaining the current balance of where you are is the future?
Now, I think it's going to become even more valuable. Make sure that everybody's working together to achieve that just really big, broad outcome. And for us, you know, that outcome is serving the community to the best of our ability, and we need people to do that. And it's sometimes staff, yes, and sometimes partners. So I think that'll be an even more vital role in the future.
So are there any trends that you have seen in your organization or and beyond that you are planning for?
I would say for us, it's really about, you know, what our community is asking for. And so we're currently evaluating that. And the exciting thing is our community just says that they want more of everything. And in our master plan, really more programming, more facilities, amenities. So we're going to be doing a feasibility study to really take a look at what that is. But when you talk about trends, public health, of course, always comes to mind, and we're, you know, having a lot of conversation about fitness and wellness trends, or how do we better serve the community or educate them around health concepts and how they can do things and make decisions. I would also say youth in the outdoors and getting people to parks is one that we're always talking about, and how do we do that, and the connectivity around getting people to parks. Those are some big topics that come up for us, and really just youth in general. You know, how do we tackle youth obesity and make that whole public health family-oriented, and making sure that everybody understands, has a good idea what that looks like. So those are some of the bigger buckets that we're looking at.
Yeah, it seems like most parks and recreation agencies, they're kind of grappling with this concept of being, it's almost like a community service provider or like a health service provider. Do you see the shift for providing more health facilities, or is it just health and wellness programming?
We partner with a lot of health providers in the community, so for us it would be just more partnerships around that and how we're delivering that. A lot of that, we have them coming in to do classes in our rec centers to help educate around, it could be mental health, it could be diabetes. So that's kind of how we tackle it in Lakewood at this time, and I think that'll sustain.
All right, I'm going to leave you with one final question. What does it mean to you to raise the bar in Parks and Recreation?
I think it's always coming in every day saying, what's next? What else can we do? What is going to be the next big thing? And I am an idea person, so I don't seem to have a problem creating those ideas, but it's really about bringing everyone together to serve the community, and how do we continue to do that? How do we continue to make sure that Parks and Recreation is in the forefront for people in your community and making sure they value it as much as we do? So for me, raising the bar, how am I going to do that? I just had a meeting the other day, for an example, with some people at Jefferson County Public Schools asking, can we get kids some graduation credit for, you know, working and being in an internship, let's say, for lifeguarding? I feel like there's a lot of added responsibility with those jobs, and with our minimum wage and the competitive market that we're going to see through 2020, what is going to set us apart, Parks and Recreation? And how are we going to still recruit those kids? So to me, it's always like just having a cup of coffee and talking about things like that. What can we do to have a greater impact and find different solutions? So I'm always looking to be a part of that bigger picture and what else we can do and what we can share with the industry that works.
All right, you guys, that was my interview with Jaina Lang. Thank you so much for listening and staying tuned. I hope you know that the sound will get better over time. I'm learning more every single time I do this, and I hope by like episode 20, this is really sounding professional. So just a few more to go. Anyways, again, thanks for staying tuned. I hope that you enjoyed my interview with Jaina. And if you are interested in being on the podcast, please let me know. You can email me simply. It's Becky@BeckyTalksParks.com. I would love to hear from you. I'm looking for people who have new ideas or new strategies or have identified new trends in the parks and recreation field. So definitely let me know. I'm excited to talk with you. I'm excited to continue the conversation in parks and recreation. You can find more info at BeckyTalksParks.com. Take care, you guys.